One thing we talk about a lot on this show is how mental health impacts relationships. And sometimes it's hard to know when you're just stressed or burnt out versus when something deeper is actually going on. This is where Talkiatry comes in. Talkiatry is a 100% online psychiatry practice that connects you with licensed medical providers who specialize in treating conditions like ADHD, anxiety, depression, and more. And unlike therapy-only platforms, this is psychiatry, meaning you're meeting with a medical provider who can prescribe medication when appropriate and provide ongoing medication management. Talkiatry makes the process of finding a psychiatrist way easier. They accept major insurers. Getting started takes just a few minutes online, and many people are able to book appointments within days, not months. Head to talkiatry.com/POR to complete the short assessment and get matched with an in-network psychiatrist in just a few minutes. That's talkiatry.com/POR to get matched in minutes. That's talkiatry.com/POR to get matched in minutes.
Your home is more than just furniture. It's an extension of you. And even small details like a rug can completely change how a space feels. I love Ruggable because they prove you should never have to choose between a home that looks great and one that's actually livable. Our living room rug was looking a bit dirty lately, so we decided to get a new one from Ruggable. I was instantly drawn to their plush all-in-one rugs because I just love a soft texture, especially when watching TV on the couch. We went with the Smoke gray plush rug. It's really made our space feel so much cozier, and I love that you can just throw it in the wash when needed. It's been so much easier to keep this rug clean because we're often guilty of eating while watching TV, and we need a rug that suits our lifestyle. If you're looking for a high quality look that's stain resistant, machine washable, and has built-in non-slip backing, then Ruggable is for you. Refresh your home with Ruggable.com. Get 10% off your first order site wide with promo code POR at Ruggable.com. That's Ruggable.com and use code POR at checkout. I'm Julie Krafcik.
And I'm Yue Xu. This is The Psychology of Relationships. Communication is often described as the foundation of a healthy relationship. But what does that actually look like in practice? And how do you know if you're doing it well, especially in times when you get activated? In this episode, we're joined by Sandy Weiner, relationship coach, author, and host of the Last First Date radio podcast, to explore the four communication archetypes and what they reveal about how we show up in conflict and connection. We break down how these patterns reflect our deeper emotional responses and why conflict can feel so triggering to our nervous systems. We also explore how to express needs without aggression or withdrawal, how attachment patterns and past relationship experiences shape communication under stress, and why misunderstandings are often more about emotional tone and unmet needs rather than the issue itself. And importantly, how becoming a more effective communicator is not an innate trait, but a learnable skill built through awareness and practice. Remember to subscribe to The Psychology of Relationships on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And if this episode helped you rethink how you communicate in relationships, we'd love a rating or review. This is The Psychology of Relationships, and you're listening to an episode that just might change the way you show up for love. Enjoy. Is a part of everyday life. When we're born, we communicate verbally and non-verbally. And when it comes to human relationships, it's arguably the most important thing to keep a relationship alive, I would say. Yet, we don't learn communication skills in school.
No.
We don't get degrees in communication. And then we're just thrown out in the world and people are like, here, go. Communicate. You'll be fine.
Or if we do get degrees, it's definitely not like interpersonal communication.
No.
Which is like, no one teaches you how to communicate in relationships ever.
Insanity, I think. But Sandy Weiner is going to enlighten us with some communication skills and just break down what communication really is. So let's just get into, why do you think relationships can really benefit from communication? Why is communication just such an important part of it?
Well, like you said, it's everything. We do not learn how to communicate well at home, most of us. It's pretty rare to have a family that's direct communicators and kind communicators and really tune into our feelings. And we don't even know what feelings are. We don't know what our needs are. We don't know anything. And I know that for me, it influenced the choices I made in dating and the way that I dated, the way that I chose a husband. My marriage was filled with a lot of really bad communication. Mm. And so when I became a coach and got divorced, it was one of the first areas that I focused on. And actually, my ex-husband had a wake-up call at the end of our marriage and went to get help in his communication. And yeah, he studied nonviolent communication, which helped the end of our marriage the last 3 years during the separation. It helped us to really be peaceful and amicable and talk. It was amazing.
So how did communication, if you don't mind us going into it, like how did communication like kind of show up in that relationship, ultimately ending it?
Well, stonewalling was a big one. Mm. So for everybody who doesn't know what that is, that's basically when somebody walks away from a conversation, shuts the door on you. So there was a lot of that. I remember trying to have difficult conversations and he was so conflict averse that we'd be like on a walk together and I'd say, I just want to talk about what happened. And he'd turn around and walk away from me and just leave me standing there. One of the hardest times in our marriage, we went on a cruise. So he was a comedian, by the way. And he was performing on the QE2. We were taking a 5-day cruise across the Atlantic from New York to England. And his parents were on the boat. That was a whole other layer of our marriage where his parents were very involved and he would go to them to talk about stuff rather than work things out with me. So we're leaving the city and I'm looking at the beautiful sunset over New York City and I say, "This is so beautiful." And he says, "Yes, I want to share it with my parents." And I said, "We're here together." And he left me on the deck as the boat was leaving. And that was the beginning of this trip. And I actually had a panic attack that night when I went to sleep. It was my first panic attack ever. And I think I just, it just, everything culminated. I was feeling trapped on the boat, feeling trapped in my marriage. And he chose his parents over me. It was just like, so I think that happens a lot. And people just don't have the skills to be able to be in conflict.
Well, I think the times I felt most anxious in relationships is when the parties weren't communicating. Like usually when you can just break it down and have a conversation, a lot of the stuff that's floating in our head goes away. But for whatever reason, it can be very difficult to like have that conversation. I think a lot of it, like I know it's something like a skill that I've had to actively work on throughout like the last like 10 years, like because it's something that I think a lot of us are afraid to speak up because we don't want to rock the boat or we don't want to like make things bad. But in theory, like actually having those conversations could make it a lot better.
Yeah. And so much is left to assumption. The stories we make up in our heads, man.
Yeah.
I see this all the time. A lot of the coaching I do is to take apart those stories with women who are making up, well, he didn't do this, so that means that. And it's like, well, how do you know that? So separating fact from fiction is a big part of our own process. So communication is on many levels. It's how we experience somebody else and the triggers that we have and the stories we make up, the assumptions. So there's yours, mine, and ours in any relationship. Mm. There's my stuff. Like I'm always triggered when something happens. And so I need to work that out. Then there's your partner's stuff. Mm-hmm. And then there's the stuff that gets created between the two of you that needs to be worked out. Mm. So I had a situation once when I was dating a guy where we were dating for a couple months and it was a Saturday night right before I was launching a new program. And you probably know that when you're in the middle of a launch, you're not exactly relaxed and there's so much to do. And so I wanted to see him Saturday night, but I told him I couldn't stay over because I knew I needed a full night's sleep. And he did not take that well. He took it personally, but he didn't talk about it. So this was the first argument we had where he receded. He used to send me these cute little texts every morning with these like funny little poems. And the next day I got nothing. And so I waited a little bit and then I wrote to him, I miss your poem. And he wrote back. He started getting into why he was upset. And I said, hey, listen, let's talk about this tonight when we can talk on the phone. We lived about an hour from each other. So that's another step. It's like, don't have tough conversations on text and make sure you bring stuff up early on.
What do you think is the main cause of a lot of issues in relationships? Is it, because I'm hearing two main ones. One is this idea that we should avoid conflict. I hear couples being proud of the fact that they never fight. And I'm like, what is wrong with you? Why do you never fight? Because people want to avoid conflict and they think that's a something to be proud of. Or is it the issue that we think we are mind readers and we're constantly trying to fill in the blank for our partner? Which one do you think is a bigger issue?
God, they're both really bad.
Maybe they go hand in hand because when you avoid conflict, then you stonewall and then you start making up stories about your partner.
Yeah. I mean, you can't stuff your emotions for a long time. People do it for, I would say months, years. They can implode and get sick. But whenever somebody says to me, I never fight, I always ask, are they having honest communication?
Right. So back to you, Sandy. Yeah. Like, were you, okay, so like, were you, like, obviously now you're, you know, you talk about communication, we're on this podcast, but you were talking about your marriage where communication was a big problem. Like, did you always view yourself as a good communicator or were there steps that you took to like practice and fine tune the skill?
I thought I was a good communicator. I thought I had all these great skills and I certainly had insight and I was pretty centered. I could like look inward when there was a conflict and I could sort of parse out what the issues were, but I really didn't know how to name my feelings or my needs. I did not know how to set boundaries. I didn't even know really what all my needs and values were. Like that, a lot of that came from coaching school. And when I really got clarity around how to understand my values, but the feelings and needs part came during the end of my marriage. When the process of nonviolent communication is the first step is to take out all the judgment and all the stuff that we make up around the person. So that they call that the jackal. And when you first are triggered by somebody or you feel hurt, you're going to probably be name calling. What a jerk. Mm-hmm. You always do this. You'd never do that. Those are all ways that we sabotage the conversation. So we have to look at all that. What are we bringing to the conversation and clear it all away? And then we get to a clean observation. This happened. So let's take the thing where I didn't sleep over the boyfriend's house and he got upset. So he could have said, when you didn't sleep at my house, I was upset. Or you didn't sleep over Saturday night. That's the fact, right? There's no feelings or needs attached to that yet. And then you go through, what was I feeling? And you go through a lot of feelings to see what exactly were you feeling? Because most of us have a very small vocabulary around emotions. Mm-hmm. And then we were feeling that because a need of ours wasn't met. And once we can identify what those two things are, we can express ourselves much more clearly. And then you can make a request of the person. The next time this happens, would you be willing to do this? You know, and then you have a conversation, but you're not accusing and you're not name calling and doing all the bad stuff that happens in fighting.
So from a learning standpoint, are there different communication styles that we can break down now so we can attach ourselves to one or the other?
So I want to say they're not static. You can be one and you can become another. And really what you want to do is be the most high functioning communicator. So I created four archetypes and they're all animals. So the first one is the lion or the lioness, and that's the assertive communicator. And the assertive communicator can speak with confidence and clarity. She knows her core values. She doesn't play games. She doesn't manipulate. And she wants to connect. You know, she knows how to set clear boundaries with others. And it's a skill set that can be learned. Then there is the scorpion, which is the aggressive style. And the aggressor is really right or wrong thinking, always wants to win. She doesn't really feel the effect of her actions and words on other people. And she thinks that her opinions, needs, and rights are more important than other people's. And she wants to be seen, heard, and appreciated, but she doesn't know how to get valued without putting other people down or being the loudest person in the room. And let's see. The koala is the passive aggressive. This was an interesting one. I was trying to find an animal for the passive aggressive. I never knew that koalas are really passive aggressive.
Are they?
They look really, yeah, they look really cuddly and sweet, but they can suddenly lash out violently.
Oh, wow. So
that's that archetype. It's that, oh, I'm so kind and oh, I'm just too nice. And really what they're doing is they're suppressing what's really true for them because they're massive people pleasers. And they may use sarcasm. They're indirectly aggressive, which I really hate. They're very often, they're two-faced. They gossip a lot. They can be deceitful. And the puppy is the submissive style. She's the real people pleaser. She just suppresses her needs and wants to make everybody happy and not upset anybody.
Oh, I was the puppy at one point.
What are you now, Julie?
Wait, what was the first one?
The lion or the lioness.
I think I'm the lion now. I feel like I've done a lot of work on communication, but it was something I struggled with for a very long time.
And what about you, Yue?
I feel like it depends on the context. Within a relationship, I would say I'm the lioness, but at work, I'm definitely the koala. Super passive aggressive.
I could see that.
Super nice. That is interesting because I do think that it depends on the context, depends on who you're talking to, and it depends on your partner in a relationship. I think I was definitely the puppy at one point with some of my previous relationships, but for my current one, I'm definitely the lioness.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. It could be the person, but I think also it can be the self-work because I actually like remember like when I revisited a past relationship, like he was like, wow, you've really changed like how you communicate. And I'm like, yeah, I've been doing this years now, you know? So it's like some of it does come out with just experience and working that muscle and being aware of it. Like I think for me, a lot of it was stemmed from childhood too.
Yeah.
That like I didn't want to like, you know, like rock the boat. Like I wanted to just like, you know, make everything be okay and good. And I didn't like, because I think I didn't want to, I grew up with fighting and I did not want that in a relationship. So I did like the reverse 180 where I wouldn't have any conflict, but then I would just suppress it. And then I would get resentful because I wasn't actually like, because you can't never have any conflict, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I grew up in your house.
Are you guys related? Sandy, yeah, what animal are you?
I'm definitely the lioness now, and I probably was more a combination of puppy and koala. I was never the scorpion because that was my family. It was a bunch of scorpions. And and there was also a lot of the passive aggressive in my family too. So there was yelling, but there was such unclear communication. And so we'd be screamed at for not doing something, but we had no idea we were supposed to do it because we were not mind readers. And so that, yeah. And I think just knowing what I didn't want was a lot of the motivation for who I became. But it's hard without the skills. I mean, every time I work with somebody new, and today I just started working with a new client who grew up in a home with very, very cold parents, which is also very common. And so she didn't get the love she needed and she struggled to keep the peace as well. So it can be from either cold or hot parents. And we don't know how to get our needs met. And I think a lot of people feel it's mean to set boundaries. It's, you know, and so when you don't know how to do it, and I teach a whole course on boundaries because of this work, it's just so important to learn how to say what you need to say and to say it nicely, you know, say it kindly, not be a pushover.
Let's hold that thought because we have a quick message from our sponsors.
Hello, Psychology of Relationships listeners. We're here to tell you about the Love Factually podcast.
On Love Factually, Paul Eastwick and Eli Finkel, who have been guests on our show and we love them, analyze rom-coms and romantic films using the science of close relationships.
In their day jobs, they're professors who teach classes about how people get into and maintain romantic relationships.
And one day they realized that more people go to the movies than go to class.
So they started the Love Factually podcast. And on each episode, they take one specific beloved movie and figure out what it gets right and wrong about attraction and close relationships.
It's such an entertaining way to revisit your favorite films and learn a thing or two about relationships at the same time.
Plus, they've had some amazing behavioral scientists as guests, like Lori Santos, Paul Bloom, Dan Pink, and Katie Milkman.
So check out the Love Factually podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So this might be controversial, but I'm not a big meal prepper. I really just like getting something fresh on the table. And when both my partner and I are working all day, sometimes we don't have time to go shopping and make an elaborate dish during weekdays, which is why I am so excited to try restaurant quality protein from Omaha Steaks. They have so many meats to choose from too, with different types of filet mignon, including butcher's cut, wagyu, grass-fed, burgers, chicken, and so much more. And the reason they are so good is that Omaha Steaks is known for their meticulous aging process. And to make it easy for delivery nationwide, they are flash frozen at their peak to give you that rich, juicy, and intense flavor that they are known for. Try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. If you're anything like me and you love finding books that completely pull you into another world, I have a recommendation for you. I recently read The Dare by the New York Times bestselling author Harley LaRue, and I totally get why this book has become such a viral sensation. It's the dark romance prequel to the bestselling Losers series and follows a former prom queen and the guy she'd relentlessly bullied in high school. Years later, they end up at the same Halloween party where one game of drink or Dare changes everything. Could not put this book down. The Dare actually made headlines after it was temporarily banned by Amazon for being too sexy before they reinstated. And this new edition is especially fun because it includes a gorgeous gold foil cover and an all-new bonus novella called Ghosted that's never been published before. So if dark romance is your thing, or if you've been looking for the next book talk worthy read, I definitely recommend checking out The Dare by Harley LaRue. You can find it wherever books are sold in print or ebook.
But I think that's why it's good that like we're starting to address that, because I think our parents' generation too, like, you know, just like you, like if we think we're uneducated with communication, like the older and older you get, like just more was stuffed again, like under the rug kind of thing. And looking in retrospect, like I certainly don't blame them. Like they were just doing their best with it. But I think the whole piece about like stating your needs in like a way that isn't mean or selfish. Like I think for a long time, I like felt like it was selfish to state my needs. And I think that was the area that my ex saw the biggest change. In me, it wasn't necessarily that we had conflict, it was that I was just more like, this is what I want and this is what I expect, opposed to expecting him to be a mind reader. And I think some of it too, I think stems from like, you know, like romantic comedies and like bad like dating books, that it's like if they really loved you, they would know what to do. And that's just not always realistic,
it's
right?
Like magic. When you're in love, you just communicate so
exactly telepathically, right?
Oh, yeah, gosh. There's so much truth to that. And I think also we tend to see the world only in our way. We don't really see the world in the way the other person does. And that's another big piece of growth. When I was having conflict with my daughter after the divorce, I hired a coach, a relationship coach, to help me with her. And I worked with her alone, but she had me draw a triangle on the ground, which I love this exercise. So you draw like a, you know, just an imaginary triangle. And one point of the triangle is you. The other point is the other person. And then the top of the triangle is the relationship. And so you first stand in your position. So you're doing this alone and you're saying what the issue is. Then you go in the other person's position and you try to see it from their point of view. Mm. And that was like, wow, I never saw it that way. And then you look at it from the relationship perspective, who you are together. And so it's fascinating to do this because I was able to see that I was expecting her to be me, you know, and to mm-hmm. see things the way I saw them and to put things away the way I would put things, you know, and it's, we get so angry, we take it personally when somebody doesn't do what we want.
Right.
And so if you just say it kindly, and then if, like if you're dating somebody and you say it kindly and you ask for what you want and they keep ignoring you, or they say, oh, you're too sensitive or you're right. too anything.
Right.
You know, and I always say if somebody says you're too something, it means you're too much for them. It's not
yeah.
that you have the problem. They have a problem with you.
But I think that's important, though, because if you expect people to be mind readers, you're not even giving them an opportunity to like react in any way. So, yes, like what you just said, if someone's like putting you down or like says they're going to do something and then they just continue not to, at least that's a data point. But if you never ask them in the first place, like they can't kind of expect that they would just know that.
No.
Yeah, we expect that in relationships a little too much. And I think that yeah. is the crux of all the dating problems and issues is that mm-hmm. even in the beginning of like when you're just texting or messaging back and forth, there's a lot of like misread messages and misunderstandings because you're just putting them in your shoes. Like, oh, this right. is why I would say it like that.
Right.
And when you really don't know, they're mere strangers. And we think we forget that when it comes to dating, you're meeting a stranger.
So I feel like the love languages was kind of like a good way to yeah. like see how different people like, you know, showed love and took in love. But I feel like there needs to be something for communication styles, even more in a way. But I guess, okay, so the three of us were able to identify ours pretty easily, probably because we've been thinking about this a lot. What about the average person that like might not know which animal they fall into? Like, what are ways that they can like identify their patterns in their communication styles, and then also their partners, if they have a partner?
So I have a quiz that will be up on my website by the time this goes live, and I'll give you a link to that. And so people can really go through and see where they come out. And not only does the quiz help you identify your communication style, but it tells you why you became that way and what you can do. Like, what are the character traits? Who becomes a puppy? The puppy developed this style because he or she grew up in a family that probably didn't honor her for who she was, but what she did. Like, she had to prove who she was. And she learned that through pleasing others, she'd be appreciated. And when she spoke up in the past, she was put down and told she was too sensitive or too loud or too something. Right. So often, and it can be a loving home. So I had a client who was brought up in a home where a parent was ill and she had to suppress who she was in order not to upset her mom. And, you know, so she became the straight A student who had to be perfect and right. ended up marrying a narcissistic man and didn't know why. And so, you know, it's clear, but throughout therapy, they never connected the dots as to how she became a codependent. She said, my parents love me so much. Yeah, they did, but you had to not be you. So when we aren't allowed to fully be us and be honored for who we are, we end up with some of these dysfunctional communication styles. And we protect ourselves by hiding parts of who we are. I mean, that's, I definitely was quiet because I didn't want to be judged. And so I think we do these things to protect ourselves and put up these shields.
And once we know how we came about this communication style, is communication style similar to schemas where it's just the way you are and you just have to learn to cope with it? Or is there like a North Star animal? Is there like the dolphin? We should all be working towards becoming the dolphin or something like that.
I think it's like attachment styles a little bit more than the schemas. Because attachment, like let's say you have an avoidant attachment style and you tend to shut down when you're in relationships and avoid intimacy. You can learn how to be a more secure attachment style in many different ways. And it's the same thing with communication. You can learn to get clear on your values and your core needs. You can stop saying yes when you mean no. Like the boundaries really help a lot with any of the codependent kinds of communication styles. And you stop doing favors for people. Like that, that's the yeses all the time. Yes, yes. I'm so nice. You're not so nice. You're depleting yourself and I don't want to be around you. You learn to accept feedback and give feedback. Like I joined Toastmasters, and part of Toastmasters is speaking up, but it's also learning how to give and receive feedback. Mm-hmm. And in the evaluation process, I mean, that's a big part of asserting yourself and becoming a lioness. So a lot of people, when I hear people give evaluations, they only say nice things. Yeah. And then they kind of relay the entire speech. And that's really not very effective or valuable. No. But when you tell someone, just like you would say in a relationship, this is the part that worked, and here's where I think you could really grow even more. Here's some areas of improvement, and you hone in on those things. That's going to be a lot more valuable than hearing your speech, you know, given back to you. And the same thing with when you're in conflict. You know, I really care about you, and here's what's not working for me, or this is making me uncomfortable. So learning scripts, learning how to say things, even at the beginning of the dating process, like you said, being able to let a person know, like, if you don't like texting, say, I don't like texting. I find it really a hard way to get to know people, and I'd love to get on the phone. Does that work for you? And there's a way to say these things where it's not like, you know, what the hell are you doing texting me so much? Or
Right. It's all how you say it. I think that's what I've learned over this is, like, I think before I thought conflict equaled yelling and getting upset. Every relationship has conflict because you're two people coming together with different worldviews and ways of processing things. And it's how you say it. Like, if you could say it in a calm way versus like a heated way. And I'm not, again, every scenario is different. There may be a scenario that's not possible. But I think the more we can like bring conflict with love, that's like, because like some of it's just like how you say it, you're going to get a response a certain way. Like someone's going to feel defensive or like whatever it may be. Like I think it's how you say it is so important.
And the intention, like what you're saying right now, it's if your intention is to connect more deeply or to get to know somebody better, let them know up front, I'm having this conversation with you because I care about you and I want to get closer to you. That takes away so much of the scariness and the defensiveness, which is another one of those terrible ways of arguing, the criticism, defensiveness, stonewalling, and contempt are the four ways, the four worst ways we can argue, because they shut the door in your face. It's all right or wrong thinking instead of, I actually want to get closer to you.
Right. Because I think the fight, it's like me versus you, there's going to be a winner and a loser. And that mentality is just setting you up for failure by getting into that.
Exactly.
How do we restructure our thinking around confrontations? Because I think in all the examples you've given, some people would classify those as confrontation when you're stating your needs. How can we get people around that mindset that it's not a confrontation? And if it is a confrontation, doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad thing.
I would use the word conflict resolution.
I like that.
Because you're really trying to resolve the issue, not have conflict. I think that people are really afraid of the big fight. And like you said, Julie, it's because the way that we've experienced conflict has been all the worst ways. You know, it's just the yelling and we feel attacked. It feels violent. Right. And that's why nonviolent communication is a way to get closer and to connect. It was actually created to have peace among gang members and warring countries. I mean, this is where this whole process started. And if you can take gang members who hate each other and find common values, because that's really where we connect. If you look at most couples, they really do have the same goals, the same values. And it's how we express it that's different. So if we can find a way to bridge that gap and say, okay, we both have the same needs, let's find a way to make it work for both of us. You both have to be willing to do it. But I think that's a way to make peace and bridge those gaps.
So outside of like taking your quiz, which I fully plan on doing with my partner also, but like, how do you like start to understand where they're coming from a bit? Because here's an example that someone in our community gave, that she's dating someone and he's a little less direct. Like he's more abstract. Like he would say, like, I want to talk more. But to her, she's like, does that mean talk on the phone, text, see each other? Like, what is that actually? Yeah, like exactly. Like, what does that actually mean? She's like, it would have been better if he just came out and said, I would like it if you called me at the end of the day every day. Like, how do you like kind of manage these two that are different? Like, that's not even a conflict per se. That's like an every, I mean, it's a mini conflict, but it's not like a, what you think of as like a blowout fight or anything. But it's like these little stressors of just two people coming at this in opposite viewpoints. Like, how do you reconcile those?
I would say curiosity is the key. Okay. Always ask questions. So if somebody says, talk more, what do you mean by that? It's a simple question. Because, I mean, if you start guessing, you're going to make yourself crazy. Mm. When I talk to my mom, I'm constantly trying to figure out what she's trying to say because she leaves out a lot of words. So I'm like, okay, I think that means that. I'm not sure. Right, did you mean that?
Yeah.
I'm not sure, Mom. You just left out a whole piece there. So it's hard for me to make that leap. But I speak up and ask for what I want. So, you know, I live with one of my children who communicates in a completely different way. And pretty much everything I say is taken out of context. And so it's like, I have to not get triggered by that. It's mm-hmm. been really very challenging. But what I'll do is I'll take a breath and center myself. And then I'll ask her, what were you making up there? Because, you know, and that's another thing is like, we make up stories. So Brene Brown says, the story I'm making up is. And that's a great way to start a conversation too. You know, just ask questions. I think it's like, you know, tell me more. What do you mean?
I love the Brene Brown, like, this is the story in my head because I feel like it's such a great way to phrase it too, because it's not putting it on your partner. It's putting it on yourself. Yeah. And I think ultimately, like, yes, I mean, like, someone can say something that offends you, but at the end of the day, it's how you are processing it. And all we can do is share that and then have them learn from that. Like, again, back to people not being a mind reader. But I think if you went into that and being like, you know, you never text me or you never call me, like, that's like a very different vibe that's going to just elicit a response back that's not like a conversation.
Right. So the you never text me is more of a Scorpio kind of approach. It's an accusation. It's not a request, right? So it's, and it's not direct. It's indirect. And now I'm feeling shamed. Right. And so break it down. Like, what do you want? And I think for anybody who has any communication style to just take a moment and ask yourself, what do I want? How can I express that? And it's a me thing. I can say what I need.
How do we get people to truly state their needs? Because in the scenario that we just gave, the need is not they want to communicate more. What I'm hearing is there's an underlying need of I need to feel more secure in this in this relationship. But I don't think people come out and say that. Instead, they say something very trivial. I wish we talked more. So how do we get people there? Communicate their needs.
Well, so I give my clients from the nonviolent communication has a list of feelings and needs on their website. And it's a good place to look because the charts, you look through the charts and you start to really feel into it. And the truth is that our thoughts and our feelings are very different, but we often confuse them. Our body really knows the feelings. And that's why nonverbal communication is so important, because often we'll say something, but our body is something else. Like it's tightening up and it's our, you know, our brow changes. So, you know, get the first place to do is check your body. Like when this is happening, what's happening in your body? Because a lot of people really don't know how to name anything. So I'll always have clients just go, is the tightening in my chest when I feel anxious? Shortness of breath. I'm clenching my fists. My jaw tightens. Like they can start to understand the trigger points in their body to help them now articulate a feeling. And then you can, I mean, there are many different sources for feelings, but it's good to get charts. and that list feelings and mm-hmm. needs so that you can have a bigger vocabulary. And a feeling is always connected to a need. So you're right. Like if somebody's not getting texted enough, they're feeling insecure. They're feeling a need for connection, a need for to be closer to that person. And it's vulnerable because maybe that person doesn't want the same level of connection that you do. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't name any of this years ago. But with the boyfriend who wanted me to sleep over, I said, you know, in this relationship, we both have to honor each other's needs. And I can't stay in this relationship if we're not going to do that. I just had a need for sleep. Right. It wasn't about you. And I just need to know that you're okay with that, you know, and that you're not going to judge me or take it personally when I need to take care of myself. Right. And that was a conversation I could never have had earlier because I didn't know. I didn't even know that I needed sleep. I probably wouldn't have gone with sleep. I would have given up my sleep and then been a bitch the next day. So it's knowing also, like, take some inventory of your own needs. And I think it's one of the most important places to start. During the day, I have people go through the day saying, will this feed me or drain me? You know, and that includes what you're putting in your mouth, the phone calls you're taking, the meetings you're saying yes to, anything that you do. You really have to start understanding if you're overdoing, overgiving, overextending, which is a big reason why people communicate poorly.
Mm-hmm. I love this digging into the deeper need that's happening. Yeah. Like, is there ever a situation where two people's communication style just clashes, like that they can't work through it?
Yeah. I mean, I think if all the relationships that don't work are usually often with, I would say, like a scorpion and a puppy or a scorpion and a koala.
Or a scorpion and anybody.
Anybody.
That just sounds like a freaking nightmare.
It's true. So let's say there's a situation where one of my clients said the guy was moody. He was moody when he didn't get his way, which means he was controlling. And he always had to have his way. But because she couldn't articulate it, she would try to take care of his moods and make him feel better. And so that's the caretaker, so that's the childhood crap that we have to work through, all that trauma. And so when you recognize, okay, I'm trying to fix somebody who's not fixable.
Right.
And so, yeah, in those situations, it's really hard to be with somebody who's a scorpion. Unless they become aware and they go for therapy themselves, just get the hell out of that relationship.
Right. It sounds like the other ones, like you can kind of, like I'm thinking back to this example about like the calling or texting.
Yeah.
Like that could have been like if you're kind of a skilled communicator, maybe that's something you could even take on if your partner's not there to be like, what is the deeper thing that's going on for you? And like try to like reframe it. Like, are there any other techniques, like if your partner just isn't there, let's say
not in the same place as they are in terms
as like communication, like honing in on their communication skills without totally calling it? Like, I mean, obviously that's like worst case scenario, but like what can they do to try to make it work if they're just like not, they're having more conflicting styles?
I would just get really vulnerable, you know, and just say, I'm really sad when we can't talk. I want to get close to you and I feel that there's a wall up. And is there a way that, you know, maybe are you not feeling safe opening up to me? Like really just get into the, you know, the granular part of it, because I think that when we get really vulnerable and we just take that guard down, it's a place where somebody can open to. And usually what we do is we keep our guard up because we don't want to get hurt. And so it's a hard thing to do, but I think we have to take those risks because otherwise two people just keep colliding. And it can be a year down the road and you're just missing each other. And, you know, and going back to attachment styles, like if you're dating an avoidant and that person doesn't feel comfortable opening up ever, it's just never going to change. It's not going to grow unless you're really open with that person and say that I can't continue unless you open up more. And maybe we need to go to therapy together. You know, I had a client who asked her boyfriend to go to therapy or even just do a couple's weekend or do something. And he he just said, no, I'm not doing anything.
Right.
She walked away.
Right. But at least you like tried in that
case. She tried. Yeah. Yeah, she tried.
I want to dive into this even more. But before we do, let's take a quick break to hear from our partners.
If your ideal romance has morally gray characters, impossible love stories, and enough emotional damage to keep you thinking about it for days, you need to read The Throne of Broken Gods by Amber V. Nicole. This is the second book in the Gods and Monsters series, and I feel like it takes everything that I loved about the first one and turns it up another level. At the center of the story are Diana, an ancient shapeshifter who's fully embracing her monstrous side after devastating betrayal, and Sam Keel, the immortal god king who still believes there's something worth saving in her. This book had me on the edge of my seat the entire read. What I love most is that the story never really lets you decide who's the hero and who's the villain, and the lines get blurrier with every chapter. I could not put it down, as I just love the banter throughout the book. And if you're a collector, the deluxe special edition is honestly stunning. With stenciled edges, full color character art and papers, a designed hardcover case, and an exclusive bonus scene. Pick up The Throne of Broken Gods by Amber V. Nicole wherever books are sold.
Staying present in a relationship might be really difficult sometimes, because it's not just one date. It's every night on the couch, every meal, every wait. What did you just say? Moment. That's where Brick comes in. Brick is a simple device that helps you put boundaries around your phone so you can actually be with your partner. You just pair the device to your phone and it locks distracting apps, and suddenly you're not half listening while trying to reply to texts or checking Instagram. Now, it's not about cutting out technology. It's about choosing presence during dinner, before bed, or when you're having a real conversation that deserves your full attention. Because relationships don't fall apart from one big thing. They fade from too many small moments of distraction. If you want to be more present with your partner, check out Brick. Go to getbrick.app/POR show for 10% off. That's getbrick.app/POR show.
I like how you phrased it too, about like I, like it came from like yourself, not like you were doing something wrong. Like you brought the you in later to have it as a collaborative conversation, but it didn't start with you. And I think I've read a lot of like communication books and like how to like phrase it. And I think the starting with your own feelings is a really good way that makes people not react on the defensive.
Absolutely. And here's a little tip about talking about your feelings. If you say, I feel that, or I feel like, you are not stating a feeling, you're stating an opinion. So I feel like you didn't come to dinner on time.
Right. Well, that's basically you, but just turned into an I statement.
Exactly. Yeah. It's true. And people do it all the time. It's like, how did you feel about that? Well, I felt that he really didn't treat me well.
Right.
That's not a feeling.
Right.
But we, most people talk like that. They're using the feel word. And so they think it's feelings. So we have to get
hit,
right? And so just catching yourself.
I love that though. Cause I mean, I never stopped to think about it. And like I said, I've read a lot of books about this stuff, but I think you're right. Like people could fall into the trap of like, I'm saying feel, but like, I'm not really doing that, instead of really getting to that deeper root of like, what is it that I'm feeling? I'm feeling insecure. I'm feeling like, I don't know, whatever you're feeling in that moment.
So good rule of thumb is, if you start a sentence with I feel, it needs to end with a feeling.
Yes.
I've definitely been guilty of this. I said stuff like, I feel like you suck at this. And that's probably not a feeling. That's just a fact.
It's just a fact. So if you had to leave people with like one tip of like how to be a more effective communicator, I know this is a broad question because people are coming at all different levels, but like what would be like one kind of universal truth you would give?
The curiosity word just keeps coming up for me. I think really ask questions. We make so many assumptions about people. And I think if we just say, what do you mean by that? Tell me more.
Right?
I even when somebody says, I need space, what if you found out what space meant? If it meant a week off because my mother's sick and I need to go to the hospital, versus this is kind of a breakup and I'm afraid to break up with you. And what if people could just be honest and just like, I really want to know, because I'm going to move on if it's scenario number two. If it's scenario number one, I'll be here waiting.
Right.
You know? And so if we could just
I I hate that phrase. I need more space. Nobody should ever use that. That was almost the demise of my relationship at the beginning of COVID when my boyfriend said, I need space. And I packed up all my shit. And I was like, I'll give you all the space forever and ever. And he's like, no, I meant for like an hour. You know?
But then that one. Okay, so you had a very strong reaction. What would that be in this? That would be the Scorpio coming out?
Really? Was I the Scorpio?
Well, you were being defensive. You were just shielding yourself. Okay, I'll give you all the space you need. It's a little passive aggressive, I think. Yeah. It's a little sarcastic.
Oh, some more the koala still.
Yeah. Yeah. I wasn't trying to be right. I was just like,
that's true.
Fine, I'll give you space.
Yeah, I'll give you all the space in the world, douchebag. Yeah. I feel that you are a douchebag. Right.
That's not in the list.
So not to turn it on you, Yue, but how did you get over that then? Like, how did you move it from koala to, I know you did, but like, how did you get over like not being the koala in this circumstance?
Well, I think it goes back to what Sandy's saying is leading with curiosity and asking more questions. When he said that he needed more space, I did not clarify. I was just like, I wasn't like, hold on, let me check. What does this mean? I was more like, fuck you. You don't love me anymore. You don't want to be in this relationship. I'm out of here. And I packed up my stuff and I went back to my own apartment for the weekend. And during that weekend, I was like, hey, I never stopped to ask, what does more space mean? And so I did call him, not very like me because I'm so prideful. But that Sunday, I called him and I was like, hey, I just really want to talk about this. I never clarified what space meant. And he was like, I used the wrong word because what I really want to say is we should really share in the responsibilities of this household. And I feel like I'm putting in a lot to like taking care of you, but I just want it to be an equal partnership. Different than wanting space, but that's how it manifested for him. But this is so typically me until this relationship. And Sandy, what you said about just like making up stories and stonewalling, that was me for the last like 39 years. You know, it's just all of my relationships ended like, well, fine. You know, if you didn't do that, then fine. I'm out of here. And this is the first relationship where someone called me out, was like, that's not how it works. Like, that's not how adult communication work. Helps that he went to therapy first. So yes.
But I love that. And that's what I mean. It's like, if you have a good partner who's going to call you up in a kind way, like call you up to your higher self, not call you up like to your lowest self, which is what a lot of people do. But, and that was one of the reasons I married my husband, actually. That was one good thing that he did, was he called me up in many ways. He wanted to really deal with stuff. And, but then it all changed once we got married. But I was attracted to that. And I realized that all my life, I was attracted to people who were really clear. Like, we had a therapist for my children once, a play therapist, and she was so clear about her standards. Like, you came in, you had to take your shoes off. You're not allowed in the therapy room. You have to pay in advance. Like, it was, everything was laid out. It was very clear. So I adapted all of those things as I got better at communication in my business as well. Like, my contract is clear. I have a very clear first session with a client about what to expect. And here's how we're going to design our relationship together. I think every couple should do that. Here's what you can expect from me. I'm probably going to screw up here. You know, can I curse? Yes, you can curse too. I mean, really, just saying stuff and putting it out there. And we don't talk about stuff enough. You know, even I asked a boyfriend once, how might you sabotage this relationship? We had been on like 3 dates and he was like, what are you talking about? I said, well, we all do stuff to sabotage. Yeah. So I'll tell you mine if you tell me yours so we can know what to look for.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay.
This is why communication is such an important topic. And I'm so glad we were able to like devote an entire episode, because I feel like over the last 5 years, I think one of our takeaways in pretty much every episode is like open communication, like communicate more. Like, that always comes up. Like, the example that you both gave basically, like, with this, like, if people are not good communicators, that's when things just dissolve. Because I could totally see the example, like, UA, you said, like, if you stormed out somewhere, why would someone like even question it? If they were not trained to question it, they're just gonna be like, oh, she's done, so I'm done. It's like always like an ego thing. So I think we should transition to takeaways, because it's been such an amazing conversation. But I think the one that keeps standing out for me, and we always say this, is the why, the three levels of why, digging deeper. And I think whatever someone says as kind of the problem that's going on, how can you take it like two levels past that to like, what is the core thing that's happening for you and then for them? And I love the other kind of big takeaway I have is there's always three people in this relationship, you, them, and the relationship. And I think that's really important to like think about it as a team. Like we're not going head to head. We're not trying to win this fight. You know, like we have the common goal of making this relationship work and loving each other and being there for each other. And how can you use conflict and communication to relay that instead of you suck, you're like, you're not meeting my needs, whatever it may be.
Right. So I love this visual of the triangle because you've got you on one side, your partner on the other side, and the goal, which is a common goal at the top, which is an uphill. So it means that it's still going to be a challenge, but you're both trying to walk uphill. Nobody's trying to go downhill from here. And I think we forget that in relationships. You enter into relationships and dating because both people want it to work. Even if it's a first date, second date, before a date, everybody goes into communication or connecting with someone else wanting it to work. So it's good to constantly ping pong back and forth between what it is my partner wants, step into their shoes, and then how can I get my needs met as well. The other takeaway I have is I feel like we jump to conclusions so much, but then the way we communicate with kids is so different because we just assume they don't know everything. So we over-communicate. We're extremely empathetic and sympathetic to kids, and we're caring and we're kind. Why don't we talk to adults in the same way? I feel like I have way more patience talking to kids because I'm like, obviously, they don't know what this means or what I'm going through, but we should approach relationships in the same way. Obviously, they do not know what's going on in your head because they are not you and they're not psychic and they cannot read your mind.
Yeah, I think mind reading, ego, and pride are the demise of relationships, right?
That's another demise triangle.
You've got exactly. The three pillars of ruining a relationship.
Ego, pride, and then mind reading at the top.
There's another great analogy. I love the child analogy. And coming in actually as a child into a relationship, bringing that sense of play and openness is so important, but also looking at other people in a dating situation as if they're from another planet. And just like, I know nothing about this planet. And I'm coming in and I'm so curious to know everything, but I'm not going to assume anything because I know nothing. And I think coming in with that beginner's mind of like, here I am on a planet I know nothing about.
Yeah, I think that's so important because I think a lot of times too with communication, we take the past, whether that's our upbringing, whether that's a past relationship, like, oh, it's happening again. But you don't know if it really is happening again because it's a new person. So I think the ultimate takeaway of this whole thing is stay curious. That is definitely the biggest thing. Bring curiosity to every conflict and communication.
And just everything in life. It'll help us with everything in life. Just staying curious. Thank you, Sandy, for being such a wonderful guest. And thanks for having us on your podcast. We had such a lovely discussion. I can't wait for people to take your quiz because ultimately what I would love to do either for a follow-up episode or bring you for one of our events is talk about if you are one of the animals, what do you do? What are the things that you need to be working on as a puppy versus as a lioness, right? Because it's going to be different, everybody's strategy to become better communicators. But thank you I feel like I am a 1 hour better communicator as a result of this episode.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And I'm gonna refrain from using I feel that. I feel like that is a takeaway for sure.
I have to give credit to one of my guests, Jocelyn Johnson, for helping me with that. Like I always knew that it was a judgment, but I didn't pinpoint it to the like in that. And it is it's like, whoa, that's so easy to catch.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, Sandy. I know we gave your bio earlier, but like if people want to like find you, what's kind of like a few ways that they can search you on the internet? the interwebs.
I'm in a lot of places on the interwebs, yes. But probably the best place is my website, lastfirstdate.com. And you can join my Facebook group, Your Last mm-hmm. First Date. Those are probably the two best.
And if you haven't done so yet, subscribe to The Psychology of Relationships today so you don't miss an episode.
Bye.